Welcome to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and for the month of November, we'll take a look inside the Social Security Administration. The SSA runs more than 1,400 offices scattered throughout the United States, but today we'll start a special two-part miniseries to explore one particular office at the agency. It's the Office of the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management. Peter Spencer is the Deputy Commissioner. And Peter, let's start with the basics. What does your office look like on the inside, and what are you responsible for?
Okay, Sean, thank you. And thanks for the opportunity to talk about our organization and Social Security Administration in general, because we really do appreciate being able to talk to folks about what's going on here. DCBFM, the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management, has a number of lines of work. We are accountable for the comprehensive financial program of budget policy, budget formulation, and, of course, budget execution. We're also accountable for an extensive accounting policy and operation that includes producing the reports that are required by Congress, such as the agency financial report. Another line of work is all of the acquisitions and grants programs for the agency. So all of the contracting is done under our auspices. Another area of accountability is our internal controls program, doing the assurances that we're doing everything correctly and according to legislative requirements. We're also accountable for records management, all kinds of records here in the agency. We're accountable for maintaining those and maintaining the right protocols. We're also the audit resolution and liaison organization. That means that our inspector general's audit reports, our reports from the Government Accountability Office, et cetera, all come through our organization. We respond on behalf of the agency to those audit reports, and we work with the components to implement the recommendations that we agree to implement. We're accountable for all of the facilities throughout the country. We have about 1,500 different Social Security facilities around the country, so we're accountable for all of those facilities and supplying them with all the equipment that they need, including furniture and all the paper and toner and all those good things that need to be out there. We're accountable for the environmental health and safety programs, making sure that we have a workplace that is absolutely the best that it can be. And, of course, included in that is our sustainability program to make sure that we're dealing with the green initiatives to move the agency forward. We're also accountable for all of our security and emergency preparedness. I know a lot of your listeners would be familiar with COOP plans and those kinds of things. So we're accountable for all the security and making sure that all of our offices are secure across the country, all those 1,500 facilities, and of course, including our headquarters. And finally, we're accountable for all of our forms, publications, printing, and our mail program policy. And included in that group is also our historians, who do a great job of keeping track of this great program that started on August 14th, 1935, when President Roosevelt signed legislation creating the program. So in my role as Deputy Commissioner, I'm also Chief Financial Officer, and I carry a number of other oversight titles. I won't mention them all, but they include Senior Procurement Executive, Senior Sustainability Officer, Senior Accountable Official for Recovery Act Funds, Senior Real Property Officer, Agency Environmental Executive, and Agency Continuity Coordinator. So lots of different titles, many of them legislatively mandated, as you would guess, and quite an exciting opportunity to serve in the federal government.
Since you're wearing a lot of different hats while you serve the agency, I'm guessing you need a pretty refined style of leadership. How do you wrangle all of these moving parts from the top of the Office of Budget, Finance, and Management?
Well, first of all, you really are dependent on your staff, and I'm very fortunate to have a great staff here, and I've been very fortunate to work with many great people all across the country. The last 10 years, I was working in San Francisco as the Regional Commissioner for Western Operations. I was here once before, in 2001, serving in this approximate role. It's changed just a little bit, but it's approximately the same. And what I found is that we have the greatest staff in the Social Security Administration. That is the heart of our organization. And so the key when you have all these roles is to be able to rely on those staff to do great things for you, to take a lot of the accountability and move things forward, to make sure that we're all prepared and that all those moving parts are in sync. And as part of that, I think it's really important that those employees need to know that you value them, that you appreciate what they do for you. Honestly, none of us as a manager is successful without our employees. They're, you know, frankly, the only thing that makes it go, and without them, we're just really chopped liver. So the bottom line is to reflect back to them that appreciation, that you value what they do, and try to keep encouraging them. And these are difficult times to do that because, as we know, there's so many external forces at play with the lack of pay increases and freezes and those kinds of things that can have an effect on the workplace environment. So I find it my accountability to work very hard to mentor and coach folks about what their careers can be, what they can do despite things that are certainly causing them some problems in their lives with the work environment. But the mission is so paramount at the Social Security Administration, because we do such a great job in serving so many people, that they can see the connection and they can feel what comes out as a result of what they do.
Peter, do you have any examples of how that spirit that's being fostered among your employees, how does that translate into the work that you're doing at the Social Security Administration?
Sean, as you may know, but your listeners may not know all of the data about the fact that here we are paying out about $850 billion this year to over 65 million people in America. There is just no program that is more pervasive in the American communities than the Social Security Administration. So we know that, we feel that, we rise to the occasion to try to serve under all circumstances. And I will tell you that I had the great honor of receiving on behalf of all the employees who work in the agency when I was in the role as the head of legislation and congressional affairs, just a little coffee mug from somebody who was on the Hill who was working with the Social Security Administration. And on that coffee mug were the words, "Whatever it takes, whatever it takes." And she said, "I give this to you on behalf of the employees at the Social Security Administration because that's what they do. They do whatever it takes." And that really makes all the difference in the world for me and for all the rest of us who are on the executive team here at Social Security. So I think it's really important as well that each of us as executives act as models to our employees about the kinds of things that are the values and principles for which we stand. And those include things like absolute ethical behavior and integrity. We have to be the models for everybody else, and we expect them and set the standards for them to follow that. We expect them to collaborate with each other. We don't have time for people to have hidden agendas or to try to work around each other. We need to work with each other as a team. That's the only way we're going to be successful, and it's even more paramount, as you can imagine, when there are limited resources. We need to communicate. We need to make sure that each other understands what we're trying to do, not just what the goal is, but why, and why we're making the decisions we're making. So it's really important that all 60-plus thousand employees at Social Security know as much about what each of us is trying to do and why we're trying to do it so they can understand and help us get there.
Peter, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd like to ask you about some specific challenges your office is facing. In particular, I'd like to talk about external budget pressures. We'll be right back with more Agency of the Month featuring the Social Security Administration. Right now, I'm speaking with Mr. Peter Spencer. He is the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management at the SSA. I'm Sean McCauley, and you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink.
Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and for the month of November, we're taking a look inside the Social Security Administration. Today I'm speaking with Peter Spencer. He's the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management at the SSA. Now, Peter, earlier you told a story about receiving a gift on behalf of your employees, and it's a coffee mug that says whatever it takes. Now, what are some specific challenges you're trying to address with that can-do attitude as you head into fiscal 2014?
Well, certainly one of the biggest challenges has been on the budget front. We've had three straight years when the president's budget request was not funded by the Congress, and in fact has spent almost $1 billion each year less than what the president requested. So over the period of the last three fiscal years ending in fiscal 13, we lost a net of 11,000 employees between our federal operations and our state operations. We have state disability determination services who do work for us. So losing 11,000 people net obviously is huge, especially when what we're involved in is public service and having our folks deal directly with the public. It leaves us in a much more vulnerable position trying to serve all those needs. And as you would guess, Sean, the challenges are greater for us because the baby boomers are retiring and retiring in droves. And the younger of the baby boomers are entering their most disability-prone years of their lives. So there are more disability applications. There are more retirement applications. So the work continues to grow. And at the same time, the staff is much fewer people. The other thing that has been a challenge is the absolute uncertainty of what the resources are going to be. So I've never seen in my 45 years now such great uncertainty and such a wide range of possibilities about what the House thinks our budget might be and what they are passing and what the Senate passes as a potential budget, and the fact that we have to look at those wide ranges and then try to put together our plans for each succeeding year. And it really is more and more difficult when you're trying to do anything that's strategic. So it forces decision making to be around more immediacies, and we have to build in enough discipline to say, we can't be just short-sighted about the emergencies that are going on around us, because there are many of them. We have to invest in the future. We have to invest in information technology. We have to invest in our employees. If we don't invest in training them, they're not going to do a quality job. They're not going to serve the public in the way that needs to be done. So the budget uncertainties certainly drive so much of our problems. And at the same time, we have to be accountable for program integrity and making sure that we're doing everything we can to serve the taxpayer who wants us to reduce improper payments and to keep fraud at a minimum and to recover overpayments that may have occurred. So it's a big balancing act. It's one that requires absolute teamwork on the part of everybody. And I'm really happy to say that the team we have here at Social Security recognizes that collaboration is necessary and steps forward and does that.
Has that collaboration during these times of budget uncertainty led to any success stories for the Social Security Administration or the Office of the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management?
Yes. One of the things that we needed to do to prepare for the uncertainties of fiscal year 14 was to implement a budgeting process that absolutely required great collaboration and accountability by everybody. And that was to implement zero-based budgeting. That is a practice that goes back many, many years, has not been employed by, I don't think, very many agencies in recent times, goes back to the Carter administration, actually. And basically what that entails is that we said to all of our components that you need to start with assuming that nothing has been justified in your budget, and you need to start justifying the first dollar all the way up to the top. And the point about that is to provide an opportunity for the commissioner to make decisions about where she sets the funding level for each of those components based on what we get out of the uncertainty that comes out of Congress. So in our zero-based budgeting, we looked at what we called minimum needs for every component. They identified what their minimum needs are, and then we asked them to provide risk-based needs. And what we meant by that is we know what your minimum needs are. Now, if you took some risks and didn't do certain things, for example, in my world, if we stopped doing maintenance on all of our facilities in the same way as often as we normally do, what are the risks associated with that? And so we built a budget around what are the risks for not doing certain things and giving more options about, okay, we just won't do that this year. We'll have to pass on that. And then we even went one step below that, which was if we really just have to get to a really, really low number, what will we just have to throw overboard in order to do that? But the idea with zero-based budgeting was to give the Commissioner of Social Security as many options as possible about choices that she would make and knowing what the consequences would be. So in this process, Sean, what is, I think, somewhat unique in this agency is we put every dollar in every component on the table so that everybody could see everybody else's dollars. And we had huge documents filled with line items of everybody's spending on everything from training to a new chair to travel to conferences, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we could all see what each other was doing. And I must say that the executive team here at SSA really stepped forward and did a great job. And I think we have provided ourselves with some options, you know, come what may.
Peter, we're going to take another quick break, but when we come back, I'd like to talk about how the Office of Budget, Finance, and Management is handling the ongoing issue of improper payments. So we'll be right back with more Agency of the Month featuring the Social Security Administration. I'm Sean McCauley, and you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Let's get down to brass tacks. There's nothing more important than trust. CenturyLink offers cybersecurity solutions to the government, and the Department of Homeland Security has approved CenturyLink to provide enhanced cybersecurity services to critical infrastructure entities to keep you efficient and secure. As your trusted technology partner, their visionary cloud infrastructure, global broadband network, along with custom communication solutions and responsive dedicated support, provide the scalable solutions you need 24/7, 365. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and for the month of November, we're taking a look inside the Social Security Administration. Today I'm speaking with Peter Spencer. He's the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management at the SSA. Now, as we come to the end of the first of a two-part miniseries focusing on your office, I'd like to talk about improper payments. The SSA gets a lot of heat for those, but first, explain what comes to mind when you think of improper payments, and then talk a little bit about how you try to reduce them.
Improper payments are very important to us, and in fact, we're following the lead of the president to try to reduce improper payments across the organization. So just to start with some definitions, improper payments are payments that result from a number of different things. First of all, an error on our part in computing the payment. We don't think we do that very often, but it can happen. That's usually based on not having the right information from the claimant or somebody else who's providing it to us about their income, resources, and those kinds of things. Secondly, not obtaining or not taking action on available information affecting the payment. There may be some information that has been reported to us, and because of staffing shortages, we may not have jumped on that information quickly enough, and there may be a payment that goes out for a month or two that is incorrect. A third area would be a beneficiary's failure to report something to us, where they They all have reporting responsibilities. If there are changes in their life that would affect their payments, they sign a statement that says they're going to report all those things, and there are times when they fail to do that. And then, of course, a fourth area obviously would be when they report something, but it's not correct. They've given us bad information. So we have to go behind that oftentimes and corroborate that the information is correct or seek other information that may conflict with what they've told us.
What do you mean when you say going behind?
So there are a number of different initiatives we have that address that, but one of them is something we call access to financial institutions. So if someone is on our supplemental security income program, which is a needs-based program, they are supposed to have limited income and resources. So as an example, they're supposed to tell us if they have bank accounts. When they tell us what they have, they may say to us that they have one bank account that's $1,000, and that's below the threshold, so they would be eligible just based on that particular factor, other factors obviously to consider. But one of the things we do is we go to other financial institutions than the bank that they reported, and we find out if maybe there are other bank accounts that the individual has. And that's been a very successful program to reduce overpayments, because it turns out that people do have hidden bank accounts. So that's an example of the kind of thing where we go behind the information that they provide to us.
Does having field offices all around the country help with that?
Sure. That's one of the things that our local field offices are directly involved in. We're a community-based organization. We're in everybody's community all over. That's why we have all the offices we have. But having those local people there, getting those reports from local financial institutions is exactly right, Sean. That's what's going on there. I think it's important for your listeners to know that one of the reasons that Social Security Administration gets some attention with respect to improper payments is not because of the error rate, because actually in the regular Social Security program, the Old Age Survivors and Disability Program, we have the most accurate program in government. Our overpayment accuracy is 99.8%, and our underpayment accuracy, meaning the number of times that people actually got underpaid, our accuracy rate is 99.9%. So 99.8 and 99.9, you can't do much better than that, for sure. But because they're such big programs, because we're paying out so many dollars, the overpayment inaccuracy results in $1.7 billion in error, and the underpayment accuracy results in $700 million in error. So those are big numbers, and anybody's going to look and say, well, what can you do about something about that, you know, that's $2.4 billion there. And in the Supplemental Security Income Program, which is a more complicated program where you're looking at income and resources because it's needs-based, our overpayment accuracy is now at 93.7%, and our underpayment accuracy is 98.2%. So we're doing well there, but again, in terms of dollars, the overpayments account for $3.4 billion, and the underpayments that we do in error account for $900 million. So those are big dollars, and so they get attention. And so you can see headlines about that, whether it's at the national level, or you might even say something in a more localized manner. But we're really striving to continue to do everything we can to improve our accuracy. And again, as I said, Sean, part of this is dependent on the individual beneficiary in their reporting to us circumstances that change in their life, because they may have new income and resources, or if they're on disability, they may medically improve, etc.
How do you make that system so accurate?
Well, there are a number of things that we do to make it accurate. First of all, in the Supplemental Security Income Program, one of the things we do is something called non-medical redeterminations. And right now we're doing a redetermination of eligibility, which again looks at the non-medical aspects, income, resources, those kinds of things, for about 30% of the SSI population every year. We're doing about a little over 2.6 million of those every year. And by going back and questioning people every year and looking at their circumstances, obviously we're digging into changes that occur. In the medical, on the medical side of looking at things, when people are on disability, we do something called CDRs, or continuing disability reviews. And these reviews are where we see if people have medically improved. Now, what's making those even more effective, both in the medical CDR side and the non-medical redeterminations, is a very extensive predictive modeling program that our folks do here, where they use huge amounts of data to predict which case situations are more likely to result in an error in payment. And then we direct our attention to reviewing those cases more frequently. We're going to review everybody over a period of time, but we're going to concentrate our more frequent reviews on those people who come out with what we would call a high error profile. And that modeling process is something we continue to refine. Demographics change, people change, et cetera. So we're continually refining that. But I will tell you that our folks who do that for us have done a fantastic job of making sure we get the biggest bang for the buck. So as an example, our medical CDRs, our disability reviews, have a return on investment of $9 for every dollar we spend in administrative time and expenses to do it. And on the non-medical redeterminations, we return about $5 for every $1 we spend. So when it comes to saving money for the government, we can do that. The problem is when we have limited budgets, we have more limited opportunity to do that. So as an example, in FY13, in the Social Security Administration, the Budget Control Act would have had us do 650,000 medical CDRs. But because of the limited budget we received and because of sequestration, ironically, where people are trying to save money, the sequestration level of funding forced us to only do 422,000 instead of 650,000 medical CDRs. And when you have a 9-to-1 return, you can see the amount of money that we could have recouped but did not because of the opportunity lost from not being funded to do that.
All right, Peter, we're going to end this conversation there for now, but we'll continue on with part two of our special look inside your office next week. Thanks for listening to Agency of the Month featuring the Social Security Administration. My name is Sean McCauley, and I'm speaking with Peter Spencer. He's the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management at the SSA. Our entire conversation is going to be linked up online at federalnewsradio.com. Just search Agency of the Month. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 11:30 a.m., only on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m., your source for federal news now.